Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this special Thursday morning edition, or afternoon edition. It's afternoon just now on the East Coast and morning on the West. So you're having lunch now on the East, here in New York, for example, where it's 53 degrees and on-off showers at the top of the hour, as well as on I should say breakfast on the West Coast. Wherever you are, we're happy to have you with us. And joining us live in an Internet Radio exclusive, the showrunner of the long-awaited Prime Video series, The Power, Rael Tucker. Rael, welcome in.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
And Rael, do I have your name right, your first name right?
Yes, you do. Good job with that.
Oh, thank you. And you're calling us, I believe, live from Los Angeles.
I'm actually in New York today. I'm in New York today.
Oh, you're in New York.
For the premiere.
Which I guess is happening tonight. Where in NYC is it going to be?
You know, Simon, they just pull up in a car and they say, get in this car and go there. And then that's where I go. I don't know where anything is happening in the world right now.
There you go. Well, Rael's with us this half hour on Tomorrow I'll Be Televised. Happy you are with us for the program All About TV's Current and Future. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway, you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, get into our chat room. It's open for you right now. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect and interact with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and we'll be live with you. Rael will be with us for most of this half hour. Because of that, we're going to have news notes, our classic trivia question, other features after the bottom of the hour. We will only have one promotional break this half hour, quarter past the hour. Rael, there's no secret that The Power has been long awaited, long anticipated, gone through a lot of hoops and ringers and bumps and bruises. Why did you decide to jump into the fray and showrun it?
Because I read the book by Naomi Alderman, The Power, in 2016. And I was like halfway through this thing, and I called up my agents, and I was like, I need to be the showrunner of this show, and this is everything I've ever wanted to do. After shows like True Blood and Jessica Jones and that kind of work, I had been waiting for something really epic and bold and original and ambitious. And frankly, shows like that don't come around very often, especially for female showrunners. Shows of this scale just aren't that many. So I originally called my agents and I said, I want to do it. And they were like, it's already happening with other people involved. You missed the boat. Get in line. And I forgot about it for like 5 years. And then I get a call and it's Amazon. And they say, hey, by the way, would you ever be interested in coming on a show called The Power, you know, finishing it for us? And I freaked out. And I was like, I guess I'm canceling everything else I'm doing with my life for the next couple years. And this is what I'm doing. So, yeah, when a show like this comes around, you say, absolutely, where, when, what time, and I'll be there.
For those who don't know, Rael was the executive producer and a main writer on the long-running vampire drama from HBO, Emmy-nominated, I might add, True Blood, and she also was involved as an executive producer for season 2 of the Peabody Award-winning series, Jessica Jones, for Netflix and Marvel. How did those adventures in being part of those shows help you in show running The Power?
They were essential to me being able to run a show of this scale. Those were ambitious projects that I wrote on and produced on, was on set for, was in editing on, you know, worked in every aspect of both of those shows. And they were also about kick-ass women, really strong, fierce, complicated, flawed human beings. And that is exactly what the show is really about. So that experience made me capable of tackling something this huge, but also speaking to the really complicated and interesting and diverse and weird characters that embody The Power.
Explain how ambitious The Power is, not only in terms of the premise, but how global the premise is.
Yeah, it's the most ambitious thing I've ever done. It takes place across the world. It's meant to shot all over the place. I mean, more places than I can count, and a lot of them I wasn't even there for because it happened before I came on board. But it follows six main characters who live across the world, and initially their stories don't immediately intertwine at all, right? They're all living in their own existing, completely different threads from each other, in totally different countries and cultures from different backgrounds. And over the course of the season, there's this magnetic pull that's sort of drawing them toward each other together, because these are going to become some of the most important and influential people in the world. And we're getting to watch that rise. But structuring something that has this many characters and this many storylines that are so disparate from each other, and steadily bringing them together and looking for thematic connection between all of that, blah, 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 all the technical stuff, that stuff is crazy, not to mention that you're talking about thousands of people who worked on the show. If you think about the entire years of all the different shoots and reshoots and writers' rooms and, you know, just the biggest group of talented, crazy artists came together to make this thing that I've ever seen.
How much of it, before we get to more about the premise and the actors who play these roles, particularly the women who have the power to, well, we'll explain the power in a bit, but how much did it help that the people you worked with in terms of the major producers were women, especially Jane Featherstone and Naomi DePere from Sister? That's the organization that put together the prize-winning HBO, which was also a Peabody winner, Chernobyl, the prize-winning miniseries.
It was super cool. I'm not going to lie. It's cool because you're talking to a bunch of people about a subject matter that they've experienced firsthand. You know, we can all relate on some level to the characters and the stories in The Power in a way that's very specific to our own lives. So there's a shorthand, right? But on the flip side, I do also just want to acknowledge, because it needs to be said, there were a ton of men that worked on this show in every department other than, say, the writer's room, you know? There are male producers, and there's incredible male cast members, and, you know, every department. So I just want to acknowledge that it wasn't like, you know, we don't like the dudes, and they weren't contributing, because they were. But we were able to create an all-female writer's room, which is something super unusual. All the directors are women. The main producers are all women. And that just doesn't happen very often in our industry. Most of us who've been around a long time remember a time when we were the only women in a writer's room. We were the only women producing a show, you know, and we had to claw our way to get here and prove ourselves a million times over. So it's nice that that was not the reality on the show.
So explain what The Power is, both literally and how is it being used in the series as a metaphor for what is going on in the world?
Yeah, so the show is about, it imagines a world where young girls initially develop a new organ that generates electricity. And that electricity allows them to become stronger than men. And it's really not just about, you know, the typical superpower fighting, violent kind of, you know, battles. It's really about how that affects the entire world, spiritually, politically. It affects how it affects a family, how it affects somebody's body. It's really taking this massive global concept and breaking it down into really the human effect of this power on each of these characters and on the world that they live in.
And how in the writing and the directing and the acting do you try to bring out all these themes? Because, again, this is a very global, very wide-ranging project with all of these different characters, all of these different scenes, all of these different environments united by this power.
Yeah, I mean, the way you do that is hiring a ton of really talented people from all kinds of backgrounds and asking them to share their personal insights and stories, right? I think from the writing perspective, at least. There were multiple writers' rooms throughout the creation of this, and so many writers contributed their own personal experiences and backgrounds to making these stories feel real and talking about representation in a real way. So that's how I did it from the writing perspective. I mean, in terms of in terms of executing something this global, yeah, we went to multiple countries and we hired people from all walks of life and we had consultants. And it was just, it was about trying to tell this as authentically as humanly possible by including people who could speak to many of these issues.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the cast, there basically are two people that people know. One is the award-winning actress Toni Collette, who plays a mayor, and there's also John Leguizamo. We know him in all walks of life. He was just recently at the start of the month at the Growth Front here in New York, which invited advertisers to check out all sorts of television networks from communities of color, whether African-American, Asian, Latino, et cetera, et cetera. And John was the keynote speaker, had a great interview with Richard Liu from MSNBC, one of the key anchor people there, about his career and where it's going. And everyone else, particularly the rest of the main characters, are new. They're unknowns. They're people we don't know about. What was it like to sort of have your two adult leads that we know and then work with all of these other actresses, all these other actresses who play the girls who grow into adults, no matter where they came from?
Well, we were stupidly blessed on this show, which I hope you all tuned in to see so that you can know what I'm talking about. But we had two incredible legends. Toni Collette and John Leguizamo are legends for a reason, right? These people are superstars. They are professionals. They show up and they're down. They know every single line. They know every single crew member's name. They are just gracious and excited and great leaders. And that's just an honor, frankly. When those people agree to say your words and show up on your show, you do a happy dance because, yeah, they're the legends. Everyone else that gets to work on the show, all of the new faces, I think there will be some legends among them. You may not be familiar with who these people are yet, but their performances are going to put them on the map. They are unlike any other actors I've seen working, especially when we set out to cast teenage girls. We were really looking for a different kind of representation of teenage girls, you know, that wasn't entirely just about sexuality and about looking like a model and about, you know, we were really exploring real girls and characters that you don't typically get to see at the center of television shows. They're not always on the poster, right? And that was really important to us, to find those faces. These actors are epically talented, professional, excited to be here, really passionate about the material, and I can't wait for all of you to get to know them.
Well, John was at Growth Front. He spoke constantly about the fact that he loves environments with a diverse in character, diverse in crew, and diverse in acting talent. He must have been a happy camper about being on this project, given the diversity of talent involved, both in front and behind the camera.
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons he's here. But I also just want to give the antidote for some of you might not have heard, but, you know, this was a show that took years to film because of COVID and scheduling issues and all kinds of things that happened, right? So John, in particular, had to come back and refilm his entire character arc for 9 episodes, right? He had to reshoot everything that he'd already filmed again. And when he came back to do that, we could not have made this show if he hadn't showed up the way he did. He was like, absolutely, let's get this right. I am so passionate about the message of this show and the message of his character in particular that he was willing to do whatever it took to make sure that we brought the show home in the way that we could all be proud of. And he set that example for every other person who also had to come back and reprise their roles or pick up because of what COVID did to this production. So, you know, John is a champion for this show. And people talk about how this is a show about women. But John's character, Rob, is one of the foundations of this series. And also John Leguizamo as a person is one of our leaders in this series. And we absolutely wouldn't be here without him.
What's it like, by the way, to be in a situation where because of the pandemic or other factors, you have to bring your actors back and say, I'm the new person in charge. And I'm running the show, and we have to reshoot for whatever the deal is. How do you manage that?
It's the worst. It's the worst thing to have to say that to people. Like, everyone's come and done amazing work, and they've been freezing cold, and they've been blisteringly hot, and they've had to do these really vulnerable performances, and now you're like, Yes, you were fantastic. Everything you did was great, but for production reasons and scheduling issues and recasting issues, we got to go redo all of that again. Get ready. And now you got to make it just as good as it was last time, but I changed half the words here. You know? So it's terrible, but also, you know, myself as a writer and producer, I usually come on from the very beginning of something, and I'm writing the first words on a page. So this had never happened to me either. I never had to show up and meet a bunch of people who didn't know me and be like, hey, you don't know me, but I'm, like, taking over the show, and here's why I'm going to make these changes, and here's why we're going to do these reshoots. But I will say I would never have done any of that, and they never would have come back and agreed to do it if it wasn't because this what was there, what the show had already achieved was so incredible and exciting and unique that we all knew this is ambitious and hard, but we need to get it right because it matters. So, yeah, it was really, really tough, but everybody showed up because there's a deep passion and commitment to what the show is about.
The show we're talking about is The Power. It is Prime Video's long-awaited unique saga, presented worldwide and filmed worldwide. And The Power begins a week from tomorrow, March 31st, on Prime Video, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we've got the showrunner of the program, Rael Tucker. If you know her, you know that she was the executive producer of the long-running vampire drama, award-winning one, on HBO, True Blood, and also one of the executive producers on the Peabody Award-winning series for Marvel and Netflix, Jessica Jones. Rael is here in New York, in the Big Apple, because tonight Prime Video is having a special screening of the series before it runs to all of you out there. And if you have a question or comment for Rael, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We'll be back at our regular time period, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, tomorrow. And on Monday, we have a very interesting show for you. Disney Channel and Disney Plus have a new original movie coming out at the end of the month called Prom Pack. You'll meet the writer, Anthony Lombardo. And we'll also find out about the just-launched Best Ever Channels version of Spin Magazine. It's a new network available, again, on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. Show Chief Executive Officer Jonathan Lombardo, who was on our program last year, he's back with us on Monday. He was supposed to be with us this past Monday, and then something came up. He got under the weather. But I'm happy to say he is back in biz, and he'll be with us again on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Rael, where was The Power filmed? What locations did you use?
Oh, boy. I mean, that's a huge list, so I'm going to get this wrong probably. I can say we shot in Vancouver, we shot in London, we shot in South Africa. That's what I know of, but I feel like there's more that I can't even remember.
Mm-hmm. And anywhere along the way, was the author, Naomi Alderman, did she have an opportunity to speak with you about how things were going and how her work was being treated?
Absolutely. Naomi Alderman, who wrote the novel, has been here every single day of this show on one level or another. She actually wrote the pilot episode, the first episode. And when I came on board, we talked every single week. She came into my writer's room. We took notes from her on every outline, every script. She was able to watch every cut. She came to set. We held hands while we were reshooting a bunch of stuff. So her and I are tight. And I'm so thrilled to say that she doesn't hate the show. It was the first thing I said to her when I came on board. It's like, my worst nightmare is that you take somebody's legacy and you turn it into something that they hate. And she said, and this is what allowed me to do my job, she said, whatever you do, don't respect the material so much. Don't respect anyone's work on this so much that you can't make it an effing great show. You have to do whatever it takes to make it effing great. And I give you permission to do whatever that is. And that was true. Never once did she say, you cannot do this. I don't agree with this. She gave her point of view. She talked me through it. And I was able to say no to her when I disagreed. So it was a real partnership.
When you initially jumped into the fray here, what was the first thing or the first few things you did to calm everybody else down, given all the long development, the long production, the long turmoil process of having this show and to just, you know, calm the waters and say, we're going to get this done. This show is going to run. People are going to see this one way or another.
I think I don't know how much of a poker face. So if I had hated it or really thought it wasn't good, everybody would have known, and it wouldn't have done anything to calm everyone down. I think there's something calming about being told the truth. And so I walked on and was just really authentic, which is like, guys, this is a really important and epic and unique and important show. And we need to do some work to get it finished, but it's brilliant or I wouldn't be here. So I think the main thing was just telling everybody that I loved it, which I do, and what I loved about it and what my intentions were, which was really like, you guys have already been in this and you've done incredible work, enough incredible work to get me to want to be involved. And now we all just need to hold hands and put our egos aside and say, what's right for the show? What's right for the show? What do we need to do to make this better? What do we need to do to make everything the best possible thing it could be? So yeah, I held hands with everyone and I told everyone the truth.
In the series, you not only deal, we said this before, you deal with not only the power of these women to have electricity shoot from their hands and fry somebody, and I've seen some of the scenes in the trailer, and boy, they are really something. But also, according to the press information, you also deal with a number of different power dynamics that get altered because of what these women can do. For you, what was the most interesting power dynamic to explore coming out of The Power?
Wow, that's a tough one, but such a good question. I think the show explores power dynamics politically, spiritually, you know, within a family. So I think hopefully everyone can relate to some aspect of power and how that affects our life, both positively or negatively. Margot's character, played by Toni Collette, who is just epic in this role, but that character really speaks to me because as a female showrunner who, you know, I've been doing this for a minute, and it took me a lot of years of kind of working my way through trying to aspire to get to some kind of position where I had some degree of power over my creativity and my work and ability to get things made. And along that way, a lot of crap happens to you while you're trying to climb that ladder, right? And once you get into that position, you know a lot about like what kind of showrunner I was going to be in the world and how I was going to handle my tiny little itty bit of power. And then you find yourself in these difficult scenarios where you have to be somebody's bad guy, you know, you have to have difficult conversations and you really have to try to think of the greater good, right? And that's something really hard to wield and benevolently. So I think I really relate to the idea of being a woman in power, trying to do something good for the world and having to make some terrible decisions along the way to get there, right? And also how the process of getting power can corrupt you. Not just like you get handed power and it turns you into a monster overnight. It's about the crap you had to go through along the way to get that power that can actually be transformative.
And how does a spiritual dynamic or spirituality dynamic play in?
So we have a character, Allie, played by Hallie Bush, who, for all intents and purposes, appears to be some kind of prophet. She's hearing a voice that may be God, and that voice is instructing her along a path and accruing followers who begin to believe that she is spokesperson and a kind of for God and a prophet. And in future story, Allie sort of becomes the face of a new religion. So that religion challenges a lot of what we have typically believed in terms of who God is and what God's purpose is. Allie's God is a woman. And at moments, that voice seems to be very positive. And at other moments, you start to question whether that voice is really taking Allie down a dark path. That's one of the mysteries of the season.
Well, we seem to be in this this era of epic television with programs like Game of Thrones, House of the Dragons, Prime Video with Lord of the Rings, your show. There's also another Prime Video program that's also been shot around the world called Citadel from the Russo brothers, which is trying to become a global franchise where the U.S. gets a version, other countries get a different version, or other continents get a different version. What do you think about this era overall of Epic TV, especially when there are more and more television programs that are being either being shot at different places around the United States or different places around the world all at the same time?
I think audiences are really demanding these days. They expect a degree of spectacle, right? And because we're capable now of creating the most magnificent spectacles. I mean, Game of Thrones sort of proved that. And before that, when I worked on True Blood at the time, we were groundbreaking that way. We were doing stuff no one had ever seen on television. And it's just kind of gotten more and more ambitious. And audiences are, I think, really hungry for that. But ultimately, at the core of everything, I mean, as an artist, the stuff that I care about are the human stories. I care about the characters, what they're saying, what the message of the show is. I think ultimately audiences watch TV because they want to be entertained, because they want to be taken on a journey, and they want to be able to connect to these characters, and they want to see parts of their own life reflected. What's exciting to me about our show in particular is that, you know, the people on the poster and the people that we're talking about are really different from each other and really different from the types of people you typically get to see on a television show. And I think everyone can find some part of themselves to identify with. And I think that's the good side of this kind of ambition, is that we're tackling so many different kinds of stories. So many different kinds of people will see themselves represented.
And also, these epics are not only multicultural in terms of where they're shot, but in some cases they're multilingual. For example, shows like Tehran, the Apple TV Plus show, which has English, it has Hebrew, it has Arabic, and so on and so forth, things like that. Did I read right in Wikipedia that you grew up with a family without a television set?
I did. So I grew up on a little tiny island in Spain called Ibiza, which is now sort of known for like a party capital of Europe. But when I grew up there a long time ago, it was really rural. I mean, we had dirt roads and nobody had telephones, and I did not have a television. So I had to write my own stories, and I formed a theater company when I was like 12 and started just writing and directing and producing all these plays because I had no other form of entertainment and nobody else did either, right? And I think that's kind of what got me here. But also, when I finally did get to watch TV, it was like the most amazing thing to me. I was just obsessed with it, and I fell in love with it. And it shaped, yeah, the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, Rael, are you already thinking, along with everybody else on the Power, about a second season? Or are you thinking as well as what's next for you beyond the Power, dealing with other projects?
Yes and yes. You cannot build a show like this and not think about where it could go next. In order to satisfyingly, you know, land the ending, you got to think about what you're setting up for the future, and you got to hope that you get to tell that story because these characters have a lot more to say. We only covered, God, way less than half of the book, you know. There's a lot more to do. And I'm also working on a couple other shows that are in development right now because, yeah, I have a lot of stories to tell myself, and I hope I get the opportunity to bring them to people.
What kind of stories do you want to tell?
I'm working on a thing for Amazon right now with Daisy Ridley, who is in Star Wars. And it's based on a book called The Better Liar. And it's a female con woman story about two women who are in an inheritance scam. It's kind of a little bit like Thelma and Louise vibes to it. I'm really excited about that one. That one's next on my list, but yeah, I'm going to continue to tell really complicated, exciting, propulsive stories about badass women. That's kind of what I do.
Yeah. You certainly showed that with Jessica Jones. I was a big fan of that program and I was thrilled it won the Peabody Award, which I think really, for a lot of films came out of left field. But when you see Jessica Jones, you see Kristen Ritter's performance, it really was a different kind of superhero show. And really had a lot of heart to it. And it was shot in New York also, which I think helps a little bit.
Absolutely. I was really proud of that show and that character and what it's about. You know, it's really fun and entertaining and marvelly, but it was also a show about consent and female power. And, yeah, I'm really proud to have been involved.
And our guest is now involved with The Power. And The Power premieres on Prime Video 1 week from tomorrow, March 31st, on smart TV sets, smart devices, and also multi-channel bundles that are circulating through those sets. More details about the program online, go to primevideo.com or amazon.com/prime. That's primevideo.com or amazon.com/prime. The Power. It all kicks off 1 week from tomorrow, March 31st, on smart TV sets and smart TV devices near you. Rael Tucker, showrunner of the program, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for finally making it happen. We're looking forward to you. Have a great time with the premiere tonight here in the Big Apple. And hopefully let's touch base again soon, whether you go to a second season with this or the other project you just talked about come our way.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thrilled to be here.
Same here. Great pleasure. Enjoy the night and have a great rest of the week and weekend.
Thank you.
Take care. Rael Tucker from The Power joining me here in New York. When we come back, news notes, our classic trivia question of the week, and a very interesting item that surfaced yesterday that you might want to pay attention to. We'll get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. It's the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love Star Trek, check out Trek Talking, Star Trek Picard, on Paramount Plus. That's the subject tonight on Trek Talking on BTR today, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific. Trek Talking exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our special Thursday afternoon edition, or morning edition if you're on the West Coast, of Tomorrow We Televise. Sometime I'm back with you here in New Haven, York, 52 degrees at the bottom of the hour. And we'd like to hear from you still. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Classic trivia question coming your way. Two book prizes in store for you if you're first with the correct answer. And a thought about an interesting development that took place yesterday about a new deal that could impact the future of interactive television. But first, let's get to news notes. Popular sports video sharing mobile and web outpost ProfileSports.tv became a TV attraction this morning. Full-time TV channel featuring videos of youth and adult amateur events is now playing on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and other smart TV sets and devices. Dave & Buster's and NAPA, the auto parts maker, are among initial advertisers on the channel. In time, Profile's TV format will expand to offer inspiring sports documentaries and classic films, according to company executives. We have invited this new network to come on our program as early as tomorrow, and we'll keep you posted. Now, quickies. Platonic, Apple TV Plus's comedy series pairing Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen, will start May 24th. Byrne's current Apple TV Plus series, Physical, will premiere its third season later this year, while Rogen moves forward with his own comedy project on Apple TV Plus with Evan Goldberg. Tubi will dip into the interactive advertising wars in the second half of 2023 via pause message, which means that if you're pausing a Tubi show, you will get an ad that will stay on your screen until you come back and resume watching that particular program. CNN will get back to News Magazine Hour Making with the whole story. Anderson Cooper will anchor the series, occupying Sunday nights as of April 16th. Radford Reborn, a five-episode documentary miniseries showcasing the upgrade of a classic automobile, debuts April 14th on Speed Vision. Comedian Barney McFarlane will develop a half-hour comedy series for Cinefix Productions. The sitcom is inspired by McFarlane's 2016 bio book, You're Better Than Me. Stars has decided to break up Outlander's next-to-last season in two. Half of the 16 episodes comprising season 7, the next to last season, will play this summer. The rest will unfold next year. And when it comes to TV originating wine clubs, you've got company Turner Classic Movies. Lifetime is partnering with Direct Wines, Inc. on its own club foray this spring with the channel's original movies, the inspiration for what wines they will showcase. And that is news notes for today. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We answer the question on Monday's program. If you're first to get the answer, we have two great books for you. Seven Ways to Become a Famous Doctor by Roland Perez. He is the host of the popular PBS series America's Health Journal. It's also a 24/7 channel on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. And from the late Emmy Award-winning comedy writer and producer Gene Parekh, The Ten Commandments of Comedy. Wonderful book. And if you're first with the correct answer of this question, you'll win both books. Here we go. What 1964 NBC sitcom featured a theme song by the Beach Boys? What 1964 NBC sitcom featured an original theme song by the Beach Boys? It was the only one they did in any television series. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with a great answer, you win. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum. I'm happy to say that since Monday, we have resolved the issue where we could not be able to post. We now can. So it's Simon Applebaum on Facebook and at UBC Simon, TWBT, on Twitter. That's Facebook, Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWT. However you get involved, first to get in is the first to win. So don't forget, play in. That's how you get in and win. And, of course, all the very best. And now before we leave you today, an observation or two. In recent weeks, I have been covering for both this program and for my other major job, which is writing columns for Media Village, the Media Leadership website, about TV set makers like Samsung, LG, and others developing game hubs where you can play video games on your smart TV set or device without having to have a console like a PlayStation from Sony or an Xbox from Microsoft. All you need is either your voice, your body language, or a wireless controller. You point the TV set, which has all the knobs and gadgets and so forth on it. Yesterday, Business Wire came out with a press release that was quite interesting, that adds a whole new dimension, not only to the idea of games played on your smart TV set or device, but maybe impacting the future of interactive television. The project is called Next. Specifically, Next Playground. It is a plug-in device that you plug into your television set that allows you to play all sorts of games with your body language, with your movement dictating the game. And the folks behind it, that's Next, believe that this is not only something you can do for games, but for other interactive programming, whether it's dance, fitness exercises, and a whole lot more. Now, as we speak, Next is at the Moscone Center in San Francisco, where the annual Game Developers Conference is going on. And they're going to have the opportunity, before the week is out, to see Next and this playground process in action. Here's what David Lee, who is the co-founder and CEO of Next, stated in a press release that came out late yesterday on Business Wire. And I quote, "Finding entertainment choices that are active, positive, and healthy can be a challenge for anyone, and families in particular. Next Playground encourages new forms of physical play and also brings people together. At GDC, Game Developers Conference, we want to show creators how full body motion interaction is something any game developer can leverage to open up a whole new world of immersive motion-based experiences. The way it's described is like an arcade, theme park, sports park, playground, and gym all rolled into one. And according to the press release, Next Playground supports any number of players and can even connect friends that you know for remote play. Now, it should be pointed out that Next is already talking to smart TV set and device makers about getting their process into their sets or as a add-on, a plug-in that you attach to the set. By the way, something else that, as I said before, I really want to stress this, that what Next is talking about, what they see as their end game, is having this be, oh, one more thing. It also be pointed out that Next is going to launch a subscription service of at least 30 games and experiences, with the first games being available on a regular basis this holiday season. And coming up in June, the organization will launch a crowdfunding campaign for this service, which, if you decide to invest in it, we'll offer priority access to early inventory and other perks. And incidentally, developer unit kits for people who want to develop games and other processes for this service, they'll be available this summer. Now, here's what they're saying also in this press release. And here's why everybody else in the television world should pay attention to what these folks are doing. And I quote, this is from the press release. "As pioneers in motion entertainment, Next is paving the way to a powerful new interactive paradigm that taps into the pure job of physical activity. Within its motion entertainment ecosystem, endless possibilities await in a range of experiences spanning different realms of interest, from dance to sports to education and interactive adventures. Compared to traditional other video games and fitness apps, Nexus motion-based experiences blend movement and interactive content to deliver entertainment that is intuitive as using your hands and feet. The experience requires no headset, keyboard, or game controller to enjoy, instead leveraging natural body movement to interact with a myriad of activities. As I've been saying for a long time on this program and other places, we are in the interactive decade. And we are at a point now where smart TV sets and smart devices have the capacity and capability to allow you, the viewer, to watch and interact with programming and own the television set through your voice, movement, and in some cases through plugins, or in the case of what Samsung and LG are doing with Game Hubs, maybe others might do before too long, the wireless controller that is not attached to a console of any kind. What Next is doing could be incredible for the whole world of interactive television and jumpstart in some very unique ways. We're going to keep an eye on this. We have already invited the people at Next, including David Lee, the CEO, to be with us on an upcoming program. We have not heard back from them, and again, we will keep you posted. We think this is a very, very big development, and I'm really surprised that nobody, whether it's an entertainment news site, whether it's the tech press, whether it's CNET or Engadget or Recode or whoever, has picked up, or TechCrunch has picked up on this project. This could be big. And again, Next is going to be showcasing what they're doing today and tomorrow at the Game Developers Conference that's at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. Again, thank you to Riel Tucker for being with us on today's program. The Power premieres March 31st, week from tomorrow, on Prime Video. For more details, primevideo.com or amazon.com/prime. We are back in our regular time period, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, tomorrow. And then on Monday, join us for a 60-year 90-minute edition featuring the writer of the new Disney Channel and Disney Plus movie Prom Pack, Anthony Lombardo, and a return visit from the Best Ever Channel's co-chief executive officer, Jonathan Bobardo. His newest work is Spin Magazine's new 24/7 channel that premiered earlier this week on smart TV sets and devices. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast, available on all sorts of podcast sites, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, other places as well. And also our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com. That's tomorrowbetelevised.com. Love to hear from you. What do you think about Rael and what she's doing with The Power and her other upcoming projects? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going, including this development on Next and its Playground upcoming service? We'd like to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, however you get involved. We get involved back with you because we do respond with you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy So is BTR General Manager, where Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website certified by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast output. Guitar Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday, whether you're still in lunch hour here on the East Coast or breakfast time on the West. Back at our regular time tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you do between now and tomorrow afternoon, please make it safe, make it great, and have a dynamite time doing it. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.